Hi, welcome. My name is Steve Champion, and I'm the CTO for Heskett.com, a Raleigh-based user experience company that used to do their own hosting, which is why I've spent the last 3 years fighting spam and various other kinds of abuse, which is why I'm here. Figure everybody else here at the conference is talking about social networking. I might as well be the one that talks about anti-social networking. So bear with me. The folks that have seen me talk before are highly skeptical that I'll be able to get through this in 25 minutes, but I only have 10 slides and welcome interruptions. So when there were only a few people in the room, I asked them what they came to learn, and I heard a few things, better ways of fighting the spam they get, better ways of dealing with the blog spam, for example. And I'm going to cover some of that. My focus is primarily on email, just because that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years. Hosting email for the last 8, but fighting it for the last 6 or 7, and fighting it in this particular way for the last 3. The first thing, I was a philosophy minor in undergrad, so first thing we have to get out of the way is definitions, because I think it's important to know what we're talking about before we can figure out how to fight it. The traditional definition of spam, aside from mail I didn't want, which tends to be sort of the Vulgate definition, is unsolicited bulk email. The oddity of that is that it actually started out in Usenet, for the folks who may remember Usenet in the day, but commonly referred to as spam. We're talking about unsolicited bulk email. Unfortunately, that doesn't cover it all. There's also phishing. There's spit, spim, various other horrible neologisms trying to expand the definition to cover all of the places where you get unsolicited messages. There's a group out in California, well, that meets a lot in California called MOG, the Messaging Anti-Abuse Working Group, which I think is probably a pretty good broader umbrella to put things under, messaging abuse. As we end up with more and more forms of messaging, we end up with more and more forms of abuse. My big, my mission in life at this point in my life is figure out how to save email, because email was the thing that got me on the net, and it's the thing that kept me on the net, and I'd hate to see it go away, even as various other forms of communication arise, texting, Twitter, instant messaging, and so on and so forth. The key to me in understanding what is abuse is that it's not about content. It's not, oh, this isn't spam because it's for a charitable cause. It's not, oh, this isn't spam because it's my politician trying to reach out to me and people from other states and countries and continents. It's about consent. Did I ask for this? Does this represent a future vector of abuse? Am I going to get more of this junk? Is there any way for me to tell you that I do not want more of this junk? It's all about respecting your wishes, respecting your intention with respect to consent. And that pretty well covers all the forms of abuse that we'll talk about today. Primarily in terms of, did I want this message, right? Did I consent to be added to this mailing list? Did I consent to be sent 400 copies of the same Nigerian 419 scam today? Simon's in the back laughing because he's actually seen 400. So medium isn't the thing that matters. It's how it's coming in, whether you ask for it or not. In addition to that, though, it's also about a sort of secondary level of consent. Not did I ask to receive this, but did I give you my permission to use my resources, my computing power, my networking, my bandwidth, to send your message to someone else. And that's where the real problem lies today with the rise of things like botnets. Why does it matter? A lot of folks who, particularly those who just got an email address, don't get any spam at all, tend to just look on the rest of us, the folks that are extremely upset, who get more spam than they do legitimate email, and say, what's the big deal? You know, it takes me 10 minutes every morning to just delete the junk that came in overnight. Well, it doesn't scale. You can't keep that up. I've had my email address for 12 years. On a day-to-day basis, I probably reject anywhere from 1,500 to 2,500 messages that would probably end up in my mailbox due to all the catch-alls and various aliases and lists that I'm on and so on and so forth, where if it comes through that list or that alias, it would end up in my mailbox. Most folks these days, if you ask the big email service providers like Message Labs, Postini, and so on and so forth, folks that provide the filtering hardware like Barracuda, will tell you that 10 to 1, it's spam to legitimate email. Problem with just hit delete is that you don't always know. I got a message today from a guy claiming to be from a guy who shared the same first name as a guy on the mailing list that I set up for my anti-spam package that said, oh, yes, false positives, right? So I freak because I'm on a really bad low bandwidth connection. I can't, you know, I keep not being able to pick up an IP address. And I'm thinking, here's a guy who's using my software. He's having trouble. I need to be able to fix it. No, it was a pump and dump scam for some penny stock, right? I have no idea why they chose that subject. Probably random. There's a guy named Joe Stewart who used to work for Lure HQ, now works for, I think, SecureWorks. I forget. It's a security something company. Did a study on a Trojan called SpamThrough. It was designed to infect a computer, open up a proxy, download other software. In other words, it's self-updating. Okay, it called back to an IRC bot, told them where they were so that he could then use it as a proxy. That one infestation was probably responsible for the fact that spam, in terms of the stuff that comes into the server, not necessarily the stuff you get, because if you're a mail administrator, you know that what the end users get is nothing like what you see, doubled between probably mid-October and the 1st of January. We're talking a doubling in volume here. Okay? That, when you start thinking about what legitimate mail means to you, starts to matter. Okay. We've had our servers fall over, basically stop accepting new connections because someone else forged a spam run with return addresses in our domain. We get the bounces from people who accept it and run it through Spam Assassin and send it back, or people who have a misconfigured Barracuda appliance or whatever. The load is staggering. And if you're a mail administrator, you already know this. If you're an end user, you may not, but it's absolutely out of control, and it's getting worse in a exponential fashion. In addition to email, and I'm sure you guys probably experience as much of this as you do of email, you've got splogs, you've got the websites that are set up to promote Phentermine or, you know, sell you Viagra or try and get you to take Hoodia or whatever. They're also exponentially rising because people are writing software that basically knows how to create them a lot faster than we can write software that knows how to prevent them. We've seen a lot of focus on 419 scams, right? Everybody know what a 419 scam is? 419 is the Nigerian legal code covering this type of thing. It's actually a very old scam. It's probably 500 or 600 years old. Started out in the 1400s with someone would write a nobleman and say, help me, I'm a Spanish prisoner in a Dutch prison or a French prison. And I have a lot of money stored away that I can't get to right now, but I will help you and give you a large chunk of the money if you can get that money out into a bank and so on and so forth. And it's a typical scam. But I need money in order to get to the money so that I can give you more of the money. Okay? I'm sure everyone here has seen at least one of these things. I'm Sergeant so-and-so in Iraq. I found the bullion, right? They're all over the place. Pump and dump. That's where you pick a penny stock, buy 10,000 shares for a penny apiece, and say, it's really going to go through the roof. There's a press release coming out on Monday. Buy it. You know, stock goes up to 6 cents. The spammer sells, makes a neat $60,000, $50,000, and then it falls over. I mean, well, if it starts at a penny, you're pretty much ruined anyway. But then the company's ruined, or at least some people think that it's the companies that are doing this themselves, but it's kind of hard to tell. If you're buying drugs online from things that are misspelled, you're probably just eating pill binder. There's nothing in them. Or if you're lucky, there's nothing in them. Sometimes it's rat poison. Sometimes it's other rat things. People who deal with workplace compliance issues and so on and so forth have to face the fact that unsolicited child porn on your desktop is probably not a good thing. If you're a teacher in Connecticut or Massachusetts, teacher in Connecticut, or Massachusetts ended up with basically pop-ups, you know, went down, typed the wrong thing, hit a site that just started throwing pop-ups at her. Turned out some of them were, you know, underage children. Well, she's been sentenced to 200 years in prison. Okay. Now, there are people from the EFF and so on and so forth that are coming in and trying to basically testify, give expert testimony on her behalf to try and convince the idiot judge that it's really not a good idea to sentence this lady for something that she really didn't do. So where's it all coming from? Who's to blame? There's a group in the UK called Spam House. that keeps track of what they call the Registry of Known Spam Operations. It's 200 worst spammers in the country, or in the world, I should say. It's folks that have been kicked off at least three ISPs for abuse violations, like terms of service violations. They maintain a list. It's at spamhouse.org. You can go up and look there. If you're an ISP, please go up and look there before you give anyone service, because you may just well be giving somebody else, you know, their fourth try at static networks. One of the things that we've noticed is, like I said, with spam through, it's no longer viruses are going out trying to say, hey, I infected 100,000 computers, look at me, right? So they get bragging rights with their friends in Hungary or wherever they're from. We're talking about a business. We're talking about old Eastern Bloc countries basically hiring out their computer science folks to write these things, renting out the botnets once they've got 100,000 or more computers under their control for Russian mobsters to send spam through. Or for, in the case of some of these clients, they'll go after a company and say, we've got a botnet that's 250,000 computers. We're going to take your website off the net for the next week unless you give us 50 grand. And some people have paid. Obviously, we know about the folks who are sort of main sleaze. You ever get any Gavalia coffee? You know, they send you the coffee pot and then charge you for the coffee for the rest of your life. Yeah, they're shameless. They'll do pretty much anything. I got one sent to an address that was formed by chopping the last two letters off of Hostmaster at our domain. Obviously a stolen or, you know, sold list. We already talked about illegal pharmaceuticals. There's also a lot of software out there, OEM software. People can, you know, sell you a copy of Microsoft Word for $4. Obviously, a lot of this stuff is just completely illegal. One reason why spam is so bad is because we had some really good spam laws in places like Washington and California, and the feds went and passed canned spam, which essentially says it's only spam if you don't do this, 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 and this when you mail to people that don't want it. ISPs, we cannot and must take responsibility for the fact that everyone on the internet paid for access somewhere, right? The folks who paid for access bought, you know, a /24 block, 255 hosts, and then named each host after two random dictionary words together. Okay, sure. You know, you're not doing that to evade filters or anything like that. Fortunately, they're the easy ones to catch because they're all in one place, and you can just say, I don't want any traffic from this place as long as they're there. It's the real criminals, the folks who are taking care of business by infecting Porter's machine and then sending out, you know, 50 messages through Porter's machine, keeping it under the rate limiting because they've got 50,000 other hosts that they can also send 50 out through. Where does it all come from? Like I said, folks who have legitimate hosting contracts with ISPs, you know, they have a T1 in their office and they have a box with the multiple virtual interfaces on it. They've got the RDNS all set up and so on and so forth. They're the easiest ones to block because we know where they are. Spamhouse, for example, will publish a list called the SBL, Spamhouse Block List, which lists a whole bunch of these folks who are basically cooperating with ISPs that in some cases were set up solely to service the spammers because spammers are willing to pay for hosting. Companies who don't know how to manage a list, right? You got a sales guy goes out, grabs the exchange box, the address book in exchange, just sucks every single email address out of it and says, hey, I've got a contacts list, right? And then he quits and sells the list to 50 other guys. And, you know, there's no way you can control that right now. You know, after it's out, you're done. There's a lot of stuff that comes through affiliate programs. You sign up and say, if you buy this book through Amazon, you get a dollar and a nickel. And then they go out and they send 200,000 messages out that encourage you to buy this book with the appropriate link so that they get all the feedback from the affiliate program. Again, we always have to come back to the question, is your computer secure? Is your network secure? If you run an office network or have a NAT and you haven't secured that NAT interface or that proxy against unauthorized outbound port 25, next time someone comes in with an infected laptop, your IP address is going to get blacklisted from here to heaven, you know, as soon as it happens because you haven't prevented it. Okay, so there's a responsibility there for folks who run networks. Folks who have control panel hosting software, cPanel, Ensem, and so on and so forth, that's a real common target for phishing, right? They'll go ahead and they'll hack a PHP site, send the messages out through some botnet pointing at this hacked site that you won't find because it's in a dot directory somewhere, and all of a sudden, you know, Granny from Topeka is typing it in, looks just like her bank, doesn't know how to read a location field, doesn't know, you know, what she's doing, doesn't know that if someone asks you to provide your account information unbidden, that it's probably, you know, via a website, it's probably not legit. Back in the day, it was all open relays, because back in the day, everything was an open relay. If I wanted to send mail to Porter, I could send it through Simon, because Simon was, you know, there weren't that many of us. We all sort of trusted each other. Well, in the late 90s, that kind of came to a rapid halt as it was wildly abused. You had blacklists like Orbs, where open relay blocking service, they would list open relays. There aren't as many of those anymore because community pressure shut them down, right? Took about 5 years to get that sort of through the heads of the folks that are running the mail servers to fix this thing so that it can't be abused. There are a few hangers-on. More common than open relays now are open proxies. So you have something like a WinGate or a WinProxy or a Squid or something running, and you haven't secured it or don't know how to secure it against outbound connections being bounced out with ever really entering your network. You're basically just mirroring traffic for someone. I talked a little bit about how my server fell over because somebody forged my address into an outbound spam run. You know, I get 500 or 600 of these a day that are coming from machines that I don't already know I don't want that null sender mail from or that, you know, non-delivery notification from. And again, PHP for some reason is very, very common. One of the things that is very important to understand about the nature of the game today is it is not just, you know, Sanford Wallace, getting an ISP, to give them hosting, sending out, you know, offers. It's not about some lawyers from Phoenix or wherever sending out green card notices. It's about Russians and others who have the resources, who have the will, who have the computing power and skill to basically get people to write whatever software they need for them and then install it because of the, you know, wildly buggy Windows software on as many machines as they can possibly think of. Used to be this was really easy. I remember one time in 2003 watching someone with the same address, same sender address, send to the same spam trap address, because I wasn't accepting any of my trap traffic back then, from 20 different hosts in 19 different ISPs, 11 different countries over the space of about 15 minutes. Okay, just watching the logs. Bouncing all over his botnet, trying to find a host that I didn't know or that the blacklist didn't know was already compromised. Last year, I saw 180 attempts. Early last year, I saw 180 attempts in a few hours. A little later, probably around October, November last year, I saw 1,800 attempts over the space of 24 hours. Same sender address, same recipient address. The botnets are getting bigger. They're not stopping. Okay. And in addition, they're not just botnets, you know, they're not just spam proxies. They're also being used to drive traffic towards websites for extortion schemes and that kind of thing. If any of you are subscribed to, I know Sophos Labs has an email list that they'll send out notices to you to let you know that they've discovered a new variant of a virus or Trojan or a worm or something in the wild. Used to be you'd get two or three a day. I get about 100 a day now. There's literally tens, almost hundreds, maybe even more than hundreds of thousands of variants of these things because the code's all in the wild. You want to go ahead and download the code to make yourself a botnet. You know, it's out there. You can customize it. It's all freely available. So like everything else, you know, copyright doesn't apply. I've got a friend down at Georgia Tech or University of Georgia who has built a database that studies all the variants so that you can go ahead and blow them out and trace the lineages and so on and so forth. He estimates that at any given moment in time, there are probably tens of millions of computers infected with one or more. They found one last year that had, I think, 52 different bots installed on it. So it was probably part of 50 or so different botnets controlled by different guys and rented out to them, you know, by them to other folks. It's an army. So what's the point? What are the different types of things? We've talked a little bit about the advanced fee fraud. You know, you pay me a little money so I can get access to the money that I'll give you 10% of. Talked a little bit about pump and dump. Phishing's always a fun one because they keep somehow finding new, HTML email templates that your bank uses when they send you HTML email and using those to get you to log into some other site. That's bad. Worse is that Some of the bots that they install actually have keylogger software. So every time you're typing, they're logging those keys. They go ahead and send it back to a Gmail account, download it, you know, shut the account down after a week. They've got all your financial information, all your private email, or at least, you know, everything you've typed in the last however long it's been running on your computer. The interesting thing is it's not just about getting access to an account. It's not about, well, if I get access to this bank account, I'll just move all the money into an offshore account or, you know, send it to the Bahamas or something like that. A lot of this stuff, recently, they've actually been, if you have an E-Trade account or something like that, they'll get your E-Trade account, but they won't drain the money out of it. They'll actually launder money through it. So for 30 seconds in the course of a day, you might actually have a lot more money in your E-Trade account than you really should, right? But don't worry, it goes away. If you can find them, report them. Something that I'm sure is near and dear to everyone's heart in here, and something that I find myself utterly defenseless against, is trackback and comment spam. Okay, so one thing that's really useful with trackback and comment spam, most of it contains URLs, right? URLs contain domains. There are services like Serbl, URIBL, that at any given point list domains that have been known to be used in spam runs, in comment spam, and so on and so forth. They started out just doing email, and they've expanded so that now if you have a domain that's been used in comment spam, you can submit it to URIBL, and they'll list it too. And I believe there are plugins that will check any domain that's found in a comment against those databases, and you can check and, you know, decide to filter it. Part of the problem, too, a lot of them can actually, instead of just saying, hey, you know, on this PageRank 6 blog, now you have a link to freevideopoker.com or something like that, thereby boosting free video poker, you end up with something that provides a link to a postcard that happens to be, you know, a Trojan or virus. This is bad because as more and more people use this stuff and the abuse gets worse, they're less and less likely to go any further with it, right? It's true for email. We had a girl, a woman that we hosted for who had basically given up on email as of 2003. She said, shut down my account. I'm going to make phone calls from here on out. You know, I work in a gallery. I don't need email. I'll talk to people. 6 months after we shut her account down, we kept the alias open. Mail to that account or some variation on that account accounted for 43% of all of our inbound spam. Do you know why? She replied to every spam she got. And the only reason I know that is because I got the bounces from the ones that were forged and so on and so forth. So don't do that. And of course, you know, it's made me gray before my time. What can you do? Secure your computer. Secure your hosting platform. If you don't have a secure hosting platform, find one. Don't keep paying money into folks who don't care about your security or theirs or the impact that that has on other people. You can use spam filters for your email, both client and server side. I tend to be a perimeter defense kind of guy. I want to know where it's coming from and block it before I have, you know, before it gets to the children. Some folks have this very high regard for client-side filtering. Oh, just train Apple Mail and it'll eventually recognize all your spam on content basis alone. I think that's a load of crap, personally. It doesn't work. It's easy to defeat. It counts on the people who are probably the least able to keep up with this stuff to keep their filters updated, keep, you know, installing the latest version of Spam Assassin or the latest rules or what have you. There are DNS-based blacklists. Who here knows what spam defenses they're using and whether they're client-side, server-side? Okay. So who here gets their email on a Unix system? Okay. Using Procmail, Spam Assassin? Okay. DCC? We'll talk later. Vipul's Razor? Yeah. I figured. Okay, client side. CloudMark, CloudMark SpamNet, Apple Mail's spam filter, Google Mail spam filter, Yahoo Mail spam filter, basically free mail spam filters. You're trusting your free mail provider to do it. How's that working for you? Reasonably well. When you try to train it, does it help? like report spam? Do you never get any more spam like that? One of the things that more ISPs are doing now, but not enough, is defensive outbound filtering. Essentially, they're saying, okay, you're on a consumer-grade modem or dial-up or DSL. Your license doesn't really allow outbound port 25. If you want, you can run a mail server on it, you know, get a static IP, pay us $10 a month. The problem with that is that it costs them a lot of money for the folks who don't know what they're doing, you know, wouldn't know what port 25 or port 587 were if it bit them. Comcast alone last year estimated that port 25 blocking, if they instituted it mid-July of that year, would cost them $58 million in customer support costs alone as people called in and said, I can't send email anymore. Okay. So there's definitely a financial reason why these folks don't want to go that direction. In the meantime, we all suffer. The other thing we can do is start suing the bastards, start throwing them in jail. There's a guy who is in a jail in Virginia now, I'm very happy to report, he went by the name of Gavin Stubberfeld. We have a client, Oxford University Press, that inherited one of his old net blocks from AT&T. He sold porn spam and pill spam and lonely wives type stuff. And by the time he was done using that AT&T net block, it was so tainted it was blacklisted everywhere. SPUs had it listed. A lot of private blacklists had it listed. They didn't know that he'd moved off it. It had been a year, year and a half since he'd actually actively sent anything out from it. But it's scorched earth as far as everyone else is concerned, right? Oxford inherited that and put their mail servers on that net block. It took them about 8 months to work it all out. He's in prison for basically getting on the wrong side of AOL. The other thing that we need to look at is ways to defeat the bots, right? Ways to predict where they're going to be, where they're going to try and send from, what they're going to try and send with. Just last week, I had fun fighting off a very persistent web form spammer. We've got a contact form, uses a Perl script that we wrote 10 or 12 years ago that we haven't really updated since then. It doesn't have a lot of hooks in it for anti-spam stuff because it hasn't needed it. This guy probed it several hundred times back in September, then went away. And then sometime late February, we started getting 3 or 4 messages a day through this guy. Fortunately, it was all blocked because he used the same domain and I, you know, had a procmail filter set up after the first two. But it gets kind of old, right? One of the things that we ended up having to do was I added a check to the script. We added a form field to the form and then hit it using CSS. What he was doing was he was grabbing the form, including the auth key, which is generated by, you know, is supposed to make it so that only someone actually fetching the form can then submit to the back end. One time only auth key, defeated that without any problem at all. He was running through the form, grabbing every single form field and filling it with random dictionary words. And then when he got to the text area, he filled it with URLs and, you know, random dictionary words and Phenermine and Viagra and OEM software and buy a Rolex watch and so on and so forth. All kinds of different stuff. Thing was, if you're filling out the form as a person in a browser, you're not going to see that one extra form field that we gave. He did, and so I just checked to see if it was, you know, filled with random dictionary garbage, and that solved that problem for now. But we're talking about a guy who has spent the last 6 months at least thinking about sending spam through this one form that goes to Heather, you know, right? One person. Stuff you shouldn't do. Don't let the spammers use you. Secure your hosting platform. Secure your software at home. Don't run operating systems. Yeah. Well, one way is to check to see if anybody within the net blocks assigned to that host is blacklisted by a place like the CBL, the Spamhouse XBL, ORDB, AHBL. There's a lot of blacklists. There are places where you can go and just look up blacklist check or I'm trying to think of, dnsstuff.com is a good place to check it. And see about whether or not your host is listed or if there are many hosts listed or IPs listed within your host net blocks that are listed because they've had a compromised script or, you know, they've hosted a phishing site or something like that. You can also get reputation data from, you know, places like DSL reports, broadbandreports.com. Spam House, the flip side, where it's not just your web hosting provider, but your ISP. Spam House has a list where you can go in, select your ISP by country, and it'll tell you just how many and how long they've been hosting various static net blocks with known spammers that have been kicked off a dozen other hosts. Don't abuse other people. How are we doing? Yep, okay. Okay. Key things to take away. Don't shift abuse onto other people, right? Challenge response may work great for keeping spam out of your mailbox, but in the process, because most of the addresses are forged, you're just bouncing it into other people, okay? Sender address verification with Verizon. Bad, bad idea. It doesn't scale, and it just shifts the cost of abuse onto other people. Don't give up. Keep your email address. I've had my email address for 12 years, right? It's possible to get through it, I guess is all I'm trying to say. Don't give up.